Hello and welcome to The Headquarters, the official podcast of RaptorsHQ.com, SB Nation's Toronto Raptors community. I'm your host, Sean Woodley, and today I'm joined by a pair of old guys. This is mean. We talked about this in the preamble, but this is Russell Peddle. First up, how you doing, man?
Feels good to be old.
And I'm also joined by Dan Grant. How are you?
Feeling good. Feeling great.
Feeling sore.
Yeah. Like an old man. Yeah, so I need some Bengay.
Oh, man. I feel really bad now. I made a crack about these two guys being the only people who would remember the 90s for the Raptors, that are the people we have as our rotating cast of hosts, and I feel bad now. So the entire podcast will be me trying to make it up to Dan and Russ here. But let's, there's some stuff to talk about today, I suppose. There's, you know, the Raptors play the game against the Cavs, and today is the day after the game against the Cavs, so it's existential crisis day for everyone who's a Raptors fan. Thankfully, the last one until the last game of the season, so we can put the Cavs behind us for a little while here. So we'll talk about that and sort of the ramifications of last night's loss and what we liked and didn't like about the game. We might touch a little bit on the blowouts from last week, but like, there's not a whole lot to take from them. Like, they were awesome over the Lakers and Hawks, like that was cool, but you know, there's not a whole lot to really glean from them analytically. And then we'll talk about, because it's the quarter mark of the season, we're going to sort of give our grades for each of the Raptors players through 1/4 of the year. And that'll be fun and very content-y, and it'll be great. And obviously we'll finish things up with our episode sponsor. Don't know if we have enough questions today to really turn that into a segment, but we'll see if any filter in. And that'll be it. Are you guys ready to get going here?
Yeah, definitely.
All right. We'll be back on the other side with more just jumbled those two talking at the same time, probably. All right. We'll be back in just a second here on the headquarters. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with Russell Peddle and Dan Grant. Gonna get real sad right now and talk about the Raptors losing to the Cleveland Cavaliers for the third time in just over a month. In the grand scheme of things, this doesn't matter a whole lot. You know, the Raptors have lost 7 games this season. 3 of them have been against the Cavs. 2 of them have been against the Warriors and Clippers. Like, they're a team that are very good against teams they're supposed to beat, and obviously have had some issues with teams that are very, very good in that next tier above them. That's not surprising. That's not something to be upset about. The Raptors are a very good team still. They're probably a top 5 team in the NBA at this point, and there's lots of good things. But the day after the Raptors lose to the Cavs is always particularly sad. Watching the game is always a tad depressing on Twitter. Russell, how are you feeling today? Are you feeling morose about losing to the Cavs for the third time? Are you sort of contemplating the existence of the Raptors in the Eastern Conference and their position? Or are you kind of just okay and it's kind of what you expected?
I'm okay and it's kind of what I expected. I think this the whole concept is overblown. As you alluded to earlier, I went through all of the Raptors' lean years. And just being definitively not as good as one team in the East, but probably better than the other 13, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I had a lot of times of, a lot of years of cheering for a team that was pretty much at the bottom, and the Raptors are still, you said maybe a top 5, I think the Raptors are definitely a top 5 team in the league, and as someone who, you know, obviously I'm a guy that cares a lot about what the numbers say, and you know, you look at margin of victory, you look at simple rating system, you look at the Pythagorean wins, all those things. The Raptors are right there with the Clippers, like almost neck and neck to be the second best team in the league by those metrics. So, yeah, the Cavaliers in a 1-to-1 matchup kind of have the Raptors go, but the Raptors are still one of the top teams in the league. They still could catch the Cavs. You know, season series means nothing. Like when the Raptors were going into playoff series, you know, having won 3 or 4 games in previous years, we kept hearing, oh yeah, the playoff series or a regular season series means nothing. This is, it's completely different now. Same thing applies the other way too. Like, okay, the regular season series is over. Like by the time it's now early December, by the time the playoffs come around, these two teams meet in the Eastern Conference Finals again, like these games won't have really mattered. So I don't think there's anything to be upset about here at all.
Yeah, I'm totally 100% with you. I think there's, you know, I understand the frustration with just sort of the inevitability of being second place and the fact that the Cavs, like, even when, I think it's probably even worse that the Raptors stay close with the Cavs, right? And, like, there's always just this chance. And even last night when it seemed like it was out of reach, the Raptors still battled back. DeRozan hit that three that wasn't. And, you know, I think that's a little bit more frustrating because it seems so close, but it's also, like, that there's just a clear gap there. Dan, what about you? Are you content today? Are you fine? Because, like, there's been a lot of people just, like, you know, questioning, just, like, you know, we'll get to Jonas Valanciunas, but there's been lots of questioning of him. There's been just sort of, like, the whole talk about what the Raptors can do to match the Cavs, and, like, they can't, really, and we'll get into sort of the X's and O's of that, too, but, like, how are you just on a just a base level today? Are you, like, fine? Are you, like, alongside me and Russell, or are you sort of, like, sad about the whole situation?
I'm not really sad. It's kind of just more confirmation. I mean, I think what we already knew.
Yeah.
It hit us in the playoffs not that long ago, and the teams now for both sides are not that different. So I didn't expect them to suddenly come out and be better. I don't know, like you were talking about the rating system, seeing the Raptors as the second best team in the NBA through what they played so far, et cetera. But like the Cavaliers have LeBron James, and when he cares, which he doesn't, you know, put it up to 100% every night, and obviously he was ready last night for Toronto. He came out firing all cylinders. They're not a good matchup for the team either. So I mean, for any team really. So no, I'm not like worried about it. As Russell said, these games, you know, when the playoffs happen in 6 months or 5 months, are not going to be what determine the outcome. With that said, I think they do matter a little bit because they just show you that as good as the Raptors have been playing, and they were absolutely on fire, they're still not quite where they need to be. It makes you feel a little bit like those, I don't know, Derrick Rose Bulls teams or those Atlanta Hawks teams,
Pacers teams, yeah.
So where you're stuck, where you just can't get past LeBron, and it's incredibly frustrating. So I start to feel a little bit more for those fan bases more than anything.
That's what it all comes down to. I mean, at the end of all this, you know, people can't be upset over the fact that the Raptors are the second best team in the East. Like a LeBron-led team, like pretty much for the past, what now, 7 years, the best team in the East has been the team with LeBron on it. LeBron is not on the Raptors, so by default, they cannot be the best team in the East, pretty much. So, I mean, you know, what are you going to do? The Raptors have been playing so well, and I don't think that this should take away from, you know, that six-game win streak, huge blowouts in there, like coming out with a winning record on that tough road trip. You know, I've seen a lot more positives this season than negatives. Like, three losses to the Cavs, like, okay, a team that is, you know, I don't think anyone would suggest that the Raptors are better than the Cavs, so it makes sense that they would lose to them. Like, I think you can go ahead and, you know, go for your 50-plus win season, be one of the best teams in the East, and you never know. You catch a break in a seven-game series. I always refer to the, like, a LeBron injury away, but, I mean, you just, you know, things are different. Sometimes you play a series down the road and something just happens, a matchup works, or you find a lineup that works and maybe you can pull something out. Like, it's not a problem for your team not to be a clear championship contender. And I kind of hate how being in a fan base in any sport, when you have a team that is, you can have a team that's really bad and you really hope for the playoffs, and then as soon as you become a playoff team, like, you suck if you're not a championship contender.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that difficult because I'm trying my best to enjoy, like, I found these last few years to be the most enjoyable time to be a Raptors fan in their entire run. And I'm including the you know, the early 2000 teams just because that felt kind of short-lived compared to this. Like, this feels sustainable. Like, every year they're up there in the 50 win range, they're, you know, winning the Atlantic Division for what that's worth, you know, and then last year getting over that playoff round hump. Like, if they can win a playoff round or two every year, get 50 plus wins, like, that's a very fun season. I like following that team. I'm okay if at the end of the day there's a team or two better than them. I mean, come on, that, you know, it's silly to be, you can be concerned about it, sure, and you can look at ways that okay, this is what the team has to do to overcome that. But at the same time, you can't overcome not having LeBron James on your team. And sometimes it's as simple as that.
Yeah, and I think there are some positives to take from last night for sure. I mean, I think you start with DeMar DeRozan. The Cavs put so much defensive attention on him. They were throwing two guys at him in the pick and roll pretty much the entire night. They started right from the hop on the first possession of the game. And DeRozan handled that in a way that I don't think we've seen him handle that kind of attention before. At least not before this season. He's done that this season, and he's been great setting up his teammates. But last night, you know, 31 points, 12 of 23 with 5 assists, and just 1 turnover. And if you were going to, if you're going to tell me before, you know, this season that a team was going to throw, you know, two guys at DeRozan every time he tried to go around a screen, I would say, yeah, he's going to turn the ball over a ton in those situations. But he's not doing that this season, and that's something you can sort of turn around. And that sort of leads into another positive, which is that the Raptors have proven they can score with this Cavs team. Like, that's not an issue whatsoever. They've pretty much been able to get whatever they want on the Cavs for the last two games, and that's a positive sign. The problem is, it's the defense that, you know, they just don't have the horses right now to match up to some of the lineups that the Cavs can throw out there, and that's the difference. It's not like, you know, last season where, you know, I think there was definitely just a clear chasm between the two teams, and like, if the Cavs tried, they were going to win. This season, there's definitely a path for the Raptors to do it. There's a thing that they can sort of do. They know what the problem is, and it's those lineups with Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, and Channing Frye. That is the biggest problem right now that faces the Raptors in this matchup, and that's something that you can go out and try to address in a trade. It's not like it's a sort of ambiguous thing where it's like, yeah, we're just worse than them. There are like tangible things you can look at that if the Raptors can improve on or find solutions for, they stand a real chance. And yeah, LeBron is always going to be a trump card, but I think if you can find some sort of move out there to sort of bring in a guy who can, you know, you need, the thing is, the Raptors already have Damari Carroll and Patrick Patterson, and I thought it was a good move by Casey to go small with them to close the game out while they had that Love, James, and Frye thing out there, because that's at least two guys that you can use to switch with that. After that, though, it gets tough because you had Terrence Ross and you had DeMar DeRozan on the floor. You needed their offense at the time, and like, it's not like you can throw Norman Powell out there and make him switch on guys like that because he just doesn't have the size. Obviously, Valanciunas was a nothing defensively. He had one of his worst games of the season last night, and Lucas Nogueira is not quite there in terms of just his overall defensive impact. So you're missing a horse there in that sort of switchy front court that you need to have in order to even just have a chance at slowing down that Cavs front court when they roll it out there. And, you know, obviously there are other things too that the Raptors have to deal with. You know, there's the rebounding, and the defensive rebounding really killed them last night, and the Cavs, just once they get offensive rebounds, they torch them. But I think there's a clear thing that the Raptors need to improve upon, and it's probably not on the roster right now in terms of a solution, but there are ways to go out and try to find that. And that gives me some hope going forward, because it's not like the Cavs are just better than the Raptors at everything. Like, Kyle Lowry, I think right now we can say, is better than Kyrie Irving. That is, just in terms of overall impact, like, I think you can say that. I think DeMar DeRozan has taken himself to a level this season where, you know, you're right on par with sort of like the Kevin Love as the second option or whatever, and you're obviously down a DeMar or whatever, but you're down a LeBron, and that sucks, and as you mentioned, that's just kind of the trump card. But I think there are ways that the Raptors can sort of go about it addressing this, and maybe it doesn't get them above the Cavs, but it gives them more of a fighter's chance. I've been rambling a lot. Dan, are you encouraged at all by what you saw last night or what you've seen of the last couple of games? I guess the three games this season against the Cavs, where they've lost like by like 12 points combined. Like, it's not like it's a blowout every time they come across each other.
No, definitely. And like, they got their best shot from the Cavs last night. You see, if you look at the box score, LeBron played 42 minutes.
Yeah.
And he had scored 34 points, which I think was his season high. You know, that's not the game he's been playing this year. And he had to really take over a lot more, which is something that he usually kind of reserves for the playoffs. You know, Love had 28 and 14, made 6 threes. Kyrie had, you know, shot 50% from the field. You know, 7 assists as well. But you got their big three at their best last night, and we lost the game by 4 points. Now, we did make that little run at the end. The game was further apart than that. Mm-hmm. You know, in the fourth quarter, I think the Raptors were down, you know, 10 and 15 and then 10 kind of in that fourth quarter. But as you said, you know, DeRozan, the way he's handling double teams is very encouraging. And again, I'll just say, like, I think seeing those flaws, and they're, as you pointed out, Sean, a lot of the things you mentioned, I agree with. Not being able to switch, not being able to handle that lineup with Fry. You know what those are. Like, as you said, it's really good to be able to pinpoint it. It's not just like you're getting overwhelmed every time.
Yeah.
So I think the biggest thing that you need is the Raptors need to find that consistent third player, and it doesn't necessarily need to be a scorer, but somebody who can play both ways and can be relied on to take the load off Lowry and DeRozan, because, you know, I was talking about the Cavs three guys giving their best shot. But Lowry and DeRozan gave their best shot last night too, and it you know, just fell short again. So they're going to need to address that in some way. I don't know if it's through a more consistent game from the players they have on the team already, improvement or what, but or if they need to make a trade. But they definitely need to find that balance.
Yeah, it's tricky, right? Like, Valanciunas has been so up and down this season. His highs have been incredible. The lows have been depressing. And you know, the defensive issues with him are definitely a concern. Russell, like, what do you sort of think of Valanciunas' fit in this? Like, he definitely isn't like what the kind of prototypical center you would think Dwayne Casey would want. I think there's a reason that he's gone to guys like Biombo and Bebe in clutch moments in the last couple of years here, because just sort of, he doesn't really bring the skill set that fits perfectly around what the Raptors do. He's still a super talented player and a very efficient scorer, and he can be fine on defense, especially when he's alongside good players, like we've seen with, you know, the Patterson lineup with him with the starters. Like, that lineup's been excellent defensively. So it's not like he's a crazy liability that just, like, nukes your defensive numbers, but need to have the right guys around him. What do you sort of think of Valanciunas as that third guy? Do you think he is that?
Yeah, you pretty much covered all the points I would have said there. But yeah, I mean, he's such an efficient offensive player that, you know, the defensive deficiencies are kind of glaring. That, like, sometimes he just looks completely unaware of what he's doing. And it can be very frustrating on the defensive end. But he's a solid rebounder. He's an efficient offensive player. So, yeah, I'm satisfied with him. I've never wanted him to be Boogie Cousins. I just want him to be a solid center.
Mm-hmm.
He does have trouble with some matchups. I mean, this is what it comes down to. If you're playing a team that has a Hassan Whiteside, for example, then great. He's good to trot out there, like big teams like even Washington or whatever. But when it comes to a team like Cleveland that can go small and that can force Valanciunas into being a liability, then, you know, you got to have someone to back that up. And I don't know, it's like sometimes it leaves the Raptors scrambling. It's like they don't have a solid plan B for that. And it's a shame when Valanciunas is taken out of the equation, because realistically he is the team's third best scorer, let's say. Like, the best third option, I'll say anyway. Maybe not pure scorer, but, you know, you want him on the floor, especially for his rebounding, because that's a problem there. Like, I mean, like last night they got out-rebounded 48-33. So, you know, you can't really... It's hard when you also have to take the guy who's the best rebounder in the game out of the game for the... Like, he only played 25 minutes, so still managed to get 10 boards, but you need those rebounds, right? So they're in a tough spot because of it.
Yeah, it's tricky. I guess, you know, the people keep talking about Paul Millsap, and as the Hawks continue to stumble down the standings, you know, the Millsap thing I think is only going to continue among Raptors fans. I mean, might as well address it right now, because Will Lue is already starting the Terrence Ross to the Hawks, a future Hawk Terrence Ross thing. And, like, he really could see it as Millsap being that missing link, right? He would provide that switchiness on defense. You could roll out you know, a Carroll Millsap Patterson front court, and, you know.
Oh my god!
And
I'm like the biggest Millsap fan there is, pretty much. Like, I love that guy.
Yeah.
I always have. I find him to be such a unique player on defense, that, like, undersized yet can cover a lot of positions and has range on offense, while also being someone who can, you know, play effectively in many different styles of play. Like, he is just. And it's so funny because it is the biggest hole and most obvious hole to everyone there is on this team, and who would be a better fit than him? So, like, it's one of those things, like, I would love to see it happen. I don't want to get my hopes up too much, but I have to admit, like, seeing the Hawks stumble lately, I'm like, oh, please, please go in the tank. Please go in the tank.
Yeah.
Like, if they're gonna move him, like, the Raptors, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't do that. Like, yes, Terrence Ross is having a good season, or yes, you know, you've got these youth pieces that you know, you don't want to sell, you don't want to mortgage the farm type thing, but I think Millsap and the fit that he would have with this team is someone that you would want to do that for, because otherwise, you know, you can't complain that, oh, we're worse than the Cavaliers, but then not swing for the fences on a deal like that. So if that ever came up as a possibility, like, I would really, really hope the team would do it. And if it ever did happen, like, I don't know what I would do. I would just...
Well, it sounded like, from what you just did when I mentioned that front court, that you might have some cleaning to do.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, I also love Millsap. I used him, Hackett and I wrote in the summer, we were doing a thing about the free agency in regards to DeRozan and Biombo, and we were just bandying around names, and it was not an accident that I used Paul Millsap as an example for a guy for the Raptors to try to acquire. That was obviously... I think it was right when Horford was going to leave, but before they had landed Dwight, or there's some window there where I thought the Hawks might just decide to tear it down.
And yeah.
The glimmer of hope that was quickly crushed. So if that's raising, you know, coming back, you know, rising up again, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, look, I mean, the Hawks are not an organization. If you listen last week, Blake Murphy had Robbie Callen from CBS Sports on to talk about the Hawks game, to preview that game. On their weekly extra podcast, click on that once, click on ours twice, and Robbie was talking about how, you know, the Hawks aren't really a franchise that is down to rebuild, because their fans aren't the kind of fans that they could keep, you know, engaged throughout a long rebuild, because, you know, that's just, Atlanta's a pretty apathetic sports town, and, you know, to just openly give up on a season and trade away Paul Millsap could be sort of devastating to them. And, you know, I'm not sure, I'm really not, my hopes are not up that it's going to happen. I do think that's really the only move out there right now that could get the Raptors to that point. You know, I don't think the Boogie Cousins thing is going to happen, because I don't think the Raptors are going to be able to match the best offers that come in for him from a whole bunch of different teams. It's not just Boston, it's like Denver and Phoenix, like all those teams have better packages they could probably throw at the Kings for Boogie. And, you know, it's so early in the season to be talking about trades, and I hate talking about trades, but it's kind of inevitable when you talk about the Raptors and the Cavs, because that's really the only avenue for the Raptors to match the Cavs and to, you know, seal off some of these weaknesses that they have against them. My question, Russell, if the Raptors were to get Paul Millsap, is Lowry, DeRozan, Millsap the best big three or best core that LeBron will have come up against in the Eastern Conference over the course of his reign?
Ooh, that's a really good question. No, because that would be Garnett, Pierce, and Allen.
Yeah, I guess the only reason is because that's kind of like late Garnett, Pierce, Allen, right? But yeah, I'd probably take them still.
Even as late Garnett, like you're talking like 2000, like when they first got put together, like Garnett was still pretty much like peak Garnett.
Yeah. Better than the Pacers teams?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah? That's tough, because Paul George is so good.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, like, so is Lowry, and so is DeRozan. Like, not obviously not as, like, I'd pick Paul George ahead of those guys, but I mean, in terms of if you want to go, like, the quality of the 1, 2, 3, or the best, you know, the top players on each team, like, even beyond just the top player, I think that would be at least the second best of them. LeBron had come up against, I'd have a hard time thinking of a better one.
Yeah.
Who's the third guy on those Bulls teams with Rose and Noah?
I guess, good question. Early, I guess Jimmy Butler wasn't quite at his peak yet.
No,
he wouldn't have been around. I'm talking like 2011.
Oh, Rose, yeah.
Rose won the MVP. Or 2012 won the MVP.
You won an 11, I think, yeah. Let's pull up that roster.
Oh, dang.
Oh, yeah.
Dang. It'd have been dang, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, dang's kind of a drop-off there. He was pretty good then, but,
yeah,
you know, MVP Rose and almost Defensive Player of the Year Noah is a pretty good combo as well. But, yeah, I mean,
Millsap. And James Johnson.
James Johnson, first round pick.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, even if they were to get Millsap, like, let's be realistic, the LeBron thing is still terrifying, and it might help the Raptors address some of the problems, but I still think they probably lose that series in, like, 6 or 7. I think it's a closer 6 or 7 than what it was last season, but, you know, none of these moves, and I think that's just the reality of LeBron, is that none of these moves that the Raptors could make are going to make them any sort of shoe-in to beat the Cavs. They're a really good team.
Millsap would give you a puncher's chance, though, right?
I agree, yeah. Especially the Cavs. I mean,
6 or 7, and a close 6 or 7, you play like 10 different times, and it will come out different ways, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that gives you more of a. It feels less. It would certainly feel less like a foregone conclusion that they're going to lose to them, right?
Yeah, and if there's an advantage the Raptors have too, I think it's their depth. You know, I think their bench. I mean, it's tough because the Cleveland's always going to roll out one of those three guys with their bench units, and they'll always be effective. But I think just if you go top to bottom in the roster, and also this matters less in the playoff series too, I suppose. But, you know, especially, I don't know what's going on with J.R. Smith. That looked really crappy last night, and really hope he's okay, but that did not look good. And then you're dealing with, like, Richard Jefferson as, like, your 7th guy or your 6th man. Like, I don't know.
Like, even if you want to go, like, beyond big three and say, like, okay, well, then Valanciunas is your 4th best player. Like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad. Right.
And like, who's the Cavs' 4th best player?
Tristan, probably.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're dealing with... Yeah, it doesn't matter as much once you go down the rosters in a playoff series because, obviously, rotations shorten. But, yeah, I do think that gives them a chance, and I guess that's the best path for the Raptors to challenge the Cavs is to make that Millsap trade. Again, we're not saying it's going to happen.
It's hard to make the money happen, too, right?
It like, is, like, yeah.
Like Corey Joseph, so...
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's very realistic without getting a third team involved or something like that, so...
Well, you gotta do... Yeah, it's nice that you have Sullinger's deal to play with a little bit.
Well, eventually, not yet.
Yeah.
In a couple weeks.
Yeah, exactly. And then you got Ross's deal, too. So, I mean, it's doable for sure. It's just... It'll take some wrangling, I suppose. And, yeah, I mean... Again, we're getting way too ahead of ourselves, but it's hard enough to talk about that because there's no on-the-roster solution, at least not this season, for the Raptors to... sort of take that step. I do kind of like the potential of Jakob Poeltl to be sort of a switchier center down the line who can sort of switch between, you know, front court positions, and maybe that helps you with that configuration that the Cavs have. And who knows how long the melted face god is going to be on Cleveland anyway, but just and shout out to Blake Murphy for that.
You're Jakob Poeltl's biggest fan, I'm convinced.
I'm a big fan of Jakob Poeltl. He's
I like him too.
Yeah, his defensive awareness and sort of fleet-footedness are very exciting to me. But anyway, there's it's hard not to get into these hypothetical trade conversations because that's really the only way you see the Raptors matching the Cavs, and that's kind of the reality, and it's also fine. And if the Raptors lose to the Cavs in the third round, or they lose in the second round for whatever reason, that's fine. The Raptors are good, and they're fun, and they're sustainable, and they'll be good going forward. So I guess that's all we have to say on this whole existential crisis segment of the show. We're going to come back on the other side. Since it's the quarter mark of the season, we're going to sort of chat about grades for each of the Raptors so far. So we'll get into that and a little bit more. We'll have the episode sponsor. We'll be back in just a second here on the headquarters. Okay, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with Dan Grant and Russell Peddle. Going to get into some quarter mark grades for the Raptors. You know, both Russell and Dan, they brought to my attention that I totally spaced on before I even came up with the idea for this segment, but just shows my genius that they're both school teachers. So this is perfect. I'm not qualified to give grades out on an official level, but I'll still do it anyway. And Russell and Dan will help us out here. Let's get into it. Let's start. We'll just go alphabetical in terms of last names. Bruno Caboclo. He is currently sporting a 45.2 defensive rating in 13 minutes played. That's something. I guess I'll give Bruno the grade. He's an incomplete, I suppose. We haven't had enough time to really see what Bruno's sort of development's been like. We've seen him in the D League where he's done some stuff. He had like a 7-block game. His defensive, you know, development seems to be way ahead of his offense, although he is shooting some threes in the D-League, which is cool. Incomplete for Bruno. He'll figure it out, and he's nice to be the human victory cigar that the Raptors can pull out at the end of games. So, yeah, good stuff. Next, Russell, we'll go to you. Damari Carroll, what do you got?
Ooh, that's a juicy one. I've been really swayed by the last several games, and if you look at his numbers for the season on the whole, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
I will give him a solid B minus. Passing grade, good grade. You know, starting to show slight signs of the Damari Carroll that we originally signed from the Hawks. Still concerned about his health, but, you know, shooting 44% from the field, 36% from three. It's pretty good. And that's after a bit of a slow start. So, yeah, I based on the potential alone, I'm willing to give him that grade, and hopefully that inspires him to try a little harder on his next exam.
Dan, do you have any qualms with that?
No, I actually had him at exactly a B-. So that's, you know, pretty, like, we got some ESPN going on here back and forth.
Areas for improvement, I would say, would be his lateral sort of staying in front of guys defensively. That's got to pick up, I think, and hopefully as he becomes more comfortable with the knee, he gets there. And
I was gonna say, that comes with any knee injury, especially. Yeah. That's like the last thing to come back is like lateral quickness. So.
Yeah, and also the...
he does have the second worst defensive rating on the team right now.
That's crazy.
Tied with Jonas.
Wow.
So, you know, I do think that's also a product of him playing against, you know, starting lineups.
With Siakam, yeah.
Lateral quickness thing is definitely something you've noticed. He is in position because he knows where to be, but sometimes quicker guys are beating him off the bounce right now, which is not what you used to see when he was in Atlanta.
Yep.
So, yeah, hopefully that comes back.
This is a perfect example of why I trust... this is a conversation for another podcast, but maybe you can have me and Hackett on someday to discuss this, but the difference between the defensive ratings on Basketball Reference and NBA.com, for those who don't know, the NBA.com defensive ratings are based on straight up, like, while they're on the court, you know, how many points per possessions the other team is scoring, whereas the defensive rating in Basketball Reference is more based, is a calculation based on defensive impact and even things like what they're doing on the floor defensively and like on an individual basis as well as on a team basis. I can't give you the full calculation here. That would be boring as hell. But plus, I don't know it precisely. But all that is to say, Damari Carroll is actually pretty middle of the pack on the team by the Basketball Reference defensive rating.
Fair enough.
So I find that one to be a better indicator of how a person is, like, how they are performing individually.
Yeah, legit.
I am definitely partial to the NBA one just because it's easier to manipulate, I think. Like, it's just...
Yeah,
it's fair. A lot more plainly presented, but yeah. Thank you for being smarter than us and knowing where to go for the good shit, Russell. the one last thing on Carroll that I would say is also the when he has the ball in his hands and he's, like, off the dribble stuff, like, I could do without that for good. It's not the most pleasurable watch. It's very Patrick Patterson like in terms of just how clunky it is, but that's besides the point. B minus for Damari Carroll. Good stuff for Carroll. And probably the best, this last little stretch we've seen from him, is it the best we've seen from him so far as a Raptor? Like,
I would say so.
Yeah. Might be, yeah. All right. Next, Dan, you get the big one, DeMar DeRozan.
Oh, well, I'm going to have to give DeMar DeRozan an A plus. I don't think you can ask any more of him. Mm-hmm. I think obviously people are still going to have their qualms with him. You know, his defense is not perfect. He has his flaws, but he just continues to improve every season. And I think a lot of people thought maybe with him getting that massive contract this last offseason, maybe he'd slow down, or maybe he peaked, or maybe, you know, what we saw last year, which was very good, you know, is what it is, but he's improved again. And it's not just his scoring. Obviously, he was on fire at the beginning of the year, and that was awesome. He's since slowed down to a more, you know, normal level, closer to last year, but still better. Like, he's still so efficient, so much more efficient than he used to be. We, you know, we talked in the Cavs game about, you know, how he's passing better out of double teams. He's not just, you know, drive and dish anymore. He's looking for people on the perimeter, more of a slash and kick kind of thing. I just don't think you can ask much more of him. I mean, if people are out there yelling that, you know, he's not a perfect two-way player, he's not an elite defender, that's, I don't know what to tell those people. That's not what he's going to be. I don't think that's something that one summer he's going to go in the gym and come back and be Tony Allen. So I think you have to give him an A+ if it's, you know, grading him versus expectations. He's done everything you could have asked for and more.
Yeah, he's been awesome. I think there's no disagreement there that he's he's been an A+ so far. Will, Lou, and I, we talked on tomorrow's Locked On Raptors podcast that we just recorded. And we talked, I was given like mid-season awards or quarter-season awards, and Will had him as his MVP, and I don't think it's hard to see that case. All right, let's move on. This one goes to me, and it's Corey Joseph. Corey Joseph has been interesting this season. He started off really poorly, but he's really sort of come on in the last couple weeks here. I think the most interesting thing about his season so far is that he's shooting the three with more regularity and with a better efficiency than he ever has. He's at 36.7% right now, which I don't think anybody expected to see from him. He's been a nice steadying force in that second unit. The second unit, since he started to come together, has really taken off and is putting up numbers similar to what they did last season. I would say for Corey Joseph, he gets a B with room for improvement. It was a rough start to the year for him, but he's come around and been everything that you want to see from him. I guess the defensive side of things, he's been a little shaky in terms of staying in front of his man. That's sort of led to a lot of issues that the Raptors have had with their defense, especially when they had that really rough stretch where they plummeted from 11th to 26th over the course of a week. It was obviously a tough stretch of schedule, but that's one area where I think you could maybe see some improvement, and I think he has improved a little bit lately. But Corey Joseph, three-point shooter, adds a lot to that second unit and adds a lot to these lineups where, you know, it's taking more advantage of DeMar DeRozan's drive and kick when he's in these units with DeMar as a sort of the two guard slash leaving Kyle to be the off guard. And it just it opens up a lot more possibilities and sort of enhances the spacing for those lineups, which is sometimes a little bit cramped. So awesome stuff from Corey Joseph in the last little while here that's brought him up to a B. He's showing improvement. Is that a thing in teacher talk? Like they're like showing improvement. They're steadily improving over the course of years. Is that like a...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, definitely. If you're moving in the right direction, that's kind of the most important thing.
Okay, cool. Call me a teacher. That's what I am. All right. Next up, this one goes to Russell. You get another big one. Kyle Lowry.
All right. Kyle Lowry, I'm going to say, is an A. I think that most people would agree that this has not been perhaps at the same level as last season. However, I think that it's just overshadowed by DeRozan, right?
Yeah.
And because he's not, like, last season was transcendent, and I think that this year at first, I meant to preface that by saying at first it didn't seem like it was as good as last season.
Right.
But, like, over this recent stretch of games, he has really, that's the amazing thing about having those two on the team, right? Like, the first half of the season to date was very DeMar-centric, and I think DeMar has still been very good the last 10 games, obviously not at the same historic level that he was at the beginning, but he's become more of a facilitator, right? Hitting, like, I think he's 13 straight games with four or more assists.
Yeah.
DeMar. So, you know, he's passing the ball off a bit more, and then you've got Lowry, who's averaging, tied for a career high in assists, a career high in rebounds, just a slightly down on the scoring end. But what's really come through is just his three-point shooting, right? Like, over the last 11 games, he's hitting 52.6% from deep.
And they're from everywhere.
I know, like, he's shooting, like, the Curry threes now.
Yeah, the one he hit last night in the first quarter was just stupid.
Oh, my Lord, yeah.
Good Lord.
This is unbelievable.
So, I'm giving him an A simply because I was going to give DeMar an A as well, like, just because of the point that Dan mentioned, too, about the defense. It's not that I expect DeMar to become Tony Allen overnight, but at the same time, you'd like to see a little bit more on that end, so... If you want to keep playing on this teacher grading thing, if I get something from a student and I still think that it's not the best possible thing that they could give, I don't want to give them the A+ just yet to kind of show them that, like, you know, there's still a little bit more you can give me.
Right, right.
And so it's hard to get the A+ for me, and so that's why I think that Kyle Lowry has been playing an A+ game. Like, if you look at the stat line, if you look at his shooting and everything like that, just everything that he's doing, but it's pretty darn close to an A plus. If I, you know, if I had maybe one more beer in me, it would have been an A plus.
Because
you can't grade papers without a direct credit.
Yeah, I've Lowry, I think I've been most impressed by his defense this season. I think it's been at a new level for him. Like, if you're looking at point guards across the league, I mean, he's probably been like a top two or three defensive point guard. If point guards figured into the defensive player of the year conversation more, I think Lowry's like one of the first guys on the list that you talk about. He's been unbelievable, and I think it's partly a function of DeRozan taking up more of the offensive usage and even Terrence Ross in those second units. You know, Terrence Ross is kind of the go-to guy in those second units now, and Lowry can focus more attention to playing defense, and he's been amazing. He's been crafty. He's been, you know, hawking passing lanes. He's been poking balls away. Last night, he just, like, straight up ripped a ball out of LeBron's hands in the first quarter, just right around the time he hit that crazy three. He guarded Kevin Love in the post a couple times last night. Like, he's been doing everything. Yeah, totally fun. And he's been, he was the best guy to guard James Harden in that game against the Rockets. He's been, I think, the best we've seen him on defense, at least in the last couple of years here. He's been a ton of fun. Dan.
Would one of you guys give him an A plus?
No, I think I'm with you. Like, the first part of the season probably drags it down a tiny little bit, but he will be an A plus by the end of the season. And I picked him in that podcast I referenced with Will. I picked him as my MVP of the team because of the defense. But yeah, Dan.
Yeah, I kind of agreed with your sentiment, Russ. If Lowry and DeRozan were students in my class, I would give Lowry the A because I think you could push him to do more. I gave DeMar the A-plus because I think he is doing the best that he can with what he has. And that's, you know,
that is fair. Yeah.
Reached his peak. Whereas Lowry, you want him to keep pushing because he has such a high ceiling. So, yeah, no, I think A is a good spot for him. Absolutely. I agree with everything you guys said.
Sweet. Dan, your turn. Lucas Nogueira.
Oh, yeah. Baby. I'm going to give him a B-plus.
Exactly what I would have given him. This is going really well.
Here we go, with kind of the exact same mentality that we were just talking about. That he's been awesome. He's been, I mean, just, again, versus expectations, what you were hoping for coming into the season. And then obviously it started kind of inauspiciously when he got hurt right away. He's been fantastic lately. I'm looking at both Basketball Reference and NBA.com now because Russell shamed me.
I didn't mean to shame. Exactly. There are different things to like in both. It's like liking if you like a hamburger and you like a chicken burger, they're both so good. But, like, you know, there's a reason to talk about both.
But the hamburger's obviously better.
Yeah. Okay. Well, in this case, Basketball Reference is the hamburger. But that's still your point. But yeah, an excellent thing about Nogueira, I might be still on the point that you're about to make, but he does lead the team in both offensive rating and defensive rating by their metrics.
Yeah, it's on both, and on both sides. The only people better than him in defensive rating on both, again, are Bruno and Fred VanVleet. So we don't
have 3 and 5 minutes. Yeah,
I don't count them in there. So Nogueira is unbelievable. He's in that way when you kind of extrapolate what he's doing. And obviously, that's a dangerous thing to do. But even just when he's on the floor, he's been so mobile and so active. The Sideshow Lob nickname, obviously, that pushes him from a B to a B-plus for me.
I like that a lot, too.
Yeah, it's so good. And he just, you know, is just he's been so good with that second unit. I think everyone was so worried about the missing Biombo, and I think they do at times. But he's been excellent, especially given how inconsistent Valanciunas has been. It's been really nice to have him in there because he's just so talented. And for him to see him harnessing it and to remember that we got him for John Salmons, John Salmon's dead body is pretty awesome. So yeah, B plus for Bebe.
I think I would have had Bebe a little bit lower, like a B minus C plus area, just because of the inconsistency. Like he's had games where he's looked awesome.
Injury too, though, right?
Yeah, the injury is a thing, and like that's kind of always been a bugaboo with him too. But like he had a stretch there after his original really nice run of games where he just kind of was non-factor for a little while. And the fouling is an issue, and he's not totally there on defense yet. Like, he's still figuring out. Like, he's not like Biombo smart where he can seal off everything around the rim. Like, he's still sort of spacey at times. But yeah, I do like what I've seen from him in the games where he's been really good. And his offense, you know, the lob factor, the vertical spacing he provides is nice, and it's different and not something the Raptors really have. So
He's shooting 79%.
Yeah, man, that's yeah. some DeAndre Jordan shit right there. Yeah.
He's also getting 2.3 steals and 3.5 blocks per 36 minutes. Like, that's
yeah,
it's nothing to sneeze at.
ACB Defensive Player of the Year, man. He's it's there. It's within him. All right, my turn.
Throwing that out there.
Yeah, it's my turn. I've got Patrick Patterson.
Ooh, that's an interesting one.
Very interesting one. I'm gonna go with an A minus for Patrick Patterson. You know, the shooting was a thing at the start of the season, and all the people who wanted a new whipping boy now that Luis Scola was gone were pointing to Patrick Patterson for missing all of his threes, but kind of overlooking the fact that he's incredibly important on defense. I think top to bottom, he's the best defensive player on the team. He's the most versatile defensive player on the team, definitely. If Lowry, you consider him the best defensive player, he can't do all the different things that Patterson can. Patterson's been a stabilizing force every time he's come in the game. He's been great on the bench unit. He's been great in the closing lineup. He has obviously lately been shooting the three like a madman, and it sort of fits into his streakiness and sort of his profile as a shooter, where he'll go cold and hot, you know, kind of, you know, seamlessly throughout the season. But the defense stays consistent, and it's not something I thought I would say about Patrick Patterson, you know, a few years ago when he was first acquired. He was never a great defender. He's even rebounding decently well this season as well. He's had a few games where the Raptors have had to go small with him, and he's kind of held up. He had 9 rebounds last night against the Cavs. He had 13 in the game against Memphis where they played small. 12 or 13, I can't remember exactly how many, but, you know, that's sort of mitigated that problem that presents itself when the Raptors do go small. He's been their best defender top to bottom, I think, so far this season. And yeah, the shooting might go away again too, but I think even when he's not shooting, he provides something that just isn't present anywhere else on the roster. So that's why I go 8- with him. You guys seem to disagree though, Russell?
Yeah, I'm not ready to give, like, I love Patrick Patterson. The points that you made, Sean, about his defense are definitely important, but I have a hard time giving anyone an A grade that is shooting 37% on the season. Like, I know he's been better recently, but 37 from the field, 36 from three. 36 from three is okay, but not from, like, you know, he's a 3-point. You want him to be kind of a specialist, so I'd like to see that even creep up a little bit. But especially the 37% shooting from the field is just not really cutting it for me. So while I do agree with most of your points, I'd have a hard time giving him an A. So I would be leaning more B plus max.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
Dan?
You know, Sean, I had him at a B minus, and I think a lot of what you said would bump him up to me to a B or a B plus, because he has been so valuable. But the inconsistency on offense has been a problem. Like, I mean, if you look at his stats, even just take the last Cavs game, he was 3 of 7 from three, which is good. That's solid.
Yeah.
But how many times did he miss a wide open look when it was just like, you know, there's a little run happening? It was just, like, there was a couple times. Four of those four misses just seemed huge. He was only 3 of 12 from the floor, and that's a tough game. He is so valuable, and he does so many other things. So why I say that, though, I want to just be clear that I'm not grading these guys against each other, right? Like, if I say Bebe's a B plus and Patterson's a B,
right,
I'm saying Bebe's better than Patterson. I'm grading them versus their own, you know, ceiling or their own expectations.
Right.
I think we're on the same page there.
Yeah, for sure. I meant for the listeners. just to make sure that I think you just need to make sure that you understand that he has that potential to improve as well. But yeah, he has been fantastic on defense.
Well, I guess I would be the teacher that just passes every student and is too liberal with the grades. So I'll take that. Russell, your turn. Jakob Poeltl.
Yes, suppose you want this one. Jakob Poeltl, I'm, you know, it's tempting to almost
give him an A+. that dunk, man! That dunk.
I know. There have been some flashes of brilliance, and you've brought them up on this podcast in the last couple of weeks. Just the, you know, the potential that he shows on defense is really something, and that dunk alone, like you said. Of all the people in the rotation, he's played the fewest minutes. It's hard to give him a top-notch grade in that he hasn't shown us, you know, a lot of consistency yet. He you know, I was half tempted to jokingly give him a D for D League, as in he should be spending more time there. But the, but you know, he was a ninth overall pick in a going to a team coming off an Eastern Conference Finals run. So it makes sense that he wouldn't be a big part of the plan right away, and he should be given the chance to, you know, feel things out. So I'm going to give him a C plus, because he's not, like, we can't really put him up. I know that we just said that we're kind of giving them based on their expectations, not, but I think that this big opening with, you know, there being a hole in the front court with the Sullinger injury and everything like that left a lot of room for someone to really stand out and to earn some minutes there. And I don't think he really has done that yet, so I see a lot of room for improvement. But I mean, he's just a rookie, too. Like, yeah. Obviously, I'm not expecting him. I wasn't expecting him to be to have an A just yet or anything like that. But based on performance so far, I'm not ready to. Maybe I'd give him a B minus because it just sounds a little nicer. But at the end of the day, like, he's not where we need him to be just yet. And but that's fine. He doesn't need to be. Like, he can get some extra seasoning in the D League. He can fill in and play some spot minutes if someone gets hurt, or you know, in garbage time or anything like that. But I'm not ready to give him anything above a C plus or a B minus just yet, because simply not even based on his performance, but simply based on the fact that you know, he's just not there yet.
Yeah, I was gonna say the same thing, like C plus, B minus, just because, you know, the foul trouble's been an issue for him, and the offense has been come and go and sort of not as strong as you'd like it to see sometimes. Like, he doesn't go up and try to finish like he did at the end of the game against the Hawks all that often, but I agree with you there. Let's try to move this on a little bit quicker. No, go ahead.
Sorry, to your point on the fouls, I meant to mention that I looked it up, that he's averaging 7.4 fouls per 36 minutes.
Yeah, so that's a thing that I'm sure will be ironed out in time as he sort of grasps the NBA speed a little bit more. But let's move this on a little bit quicker. Norman Powell, Dan.
Norman. I don't know what to say about Norman. You know what? I've got Norman as an A-. And it's hard to... That grade is not a grade based on his play, because obviously... I mean, it is based on his play when he gets to play, because obviously his minutes have been sometimes few and far between. They're trying to kind of struggling to find ways to put him in the lineup more consistently. He's got to play and start when DeMar DeCarroll is not playing, but now that Carroll seems to be playing more minutes and more consistently and actually playing well, Powell is kind of in and out of the lineup. But I think the fact that he's so effective when he does play is the reason I'm giving him that grade. I think that the fact that he's always ready, he's just such a professional, even though he's so young. He does everything that's asked of him. He comes right in, he plays hard defense. He never, you don't really see him ever, I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but I rarely see him make a glaring mistake of any kind. He's shooting 44% from three, so obviously he's worked on that over the summer. He's just ready. And having a guy like that that you got so late in the draft is just such, it's like finding not even a 20 in your jeans. It's like finding a 50, because he's so great. And I wish they could find a way to get him into the lineup more consistently.
Yeah, it'll come. Like, if they're a deep team and a good team, and teams don't usually run more than 9 guys, and Casey's tried to find some creative ways to do it, he'll get his time. It's not something I think people need to be worried about. I'm not saying you're worried about it. I just
think, no, yeah, totally. Yeah,
that's been one of the things... Yeah. One of the things I wanted to punch commenters over, so...
his range is such an added bonus, too. Like, that is still the thing that I'm the most excited about with him is, like, you know, he was a 31% shooter in college.
Yeah.
And now, you know, his second straight season of shooting over 40%, that's pretty darn great.
He's very Wesley Matthews-ish.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love Wes Matthews when Wes Matthews was still Wes Matthews.
Yeah.
Okay. When he had the Achilles.
Yeah. All right. I get Terrence Ross, A+. Moving on. Russell, you get Pascal Siakam.
I'm not even going to argue with that. Like, what more do we want out of? And they're trying to blow by that without having anyone say anything. But the no, seriously, Terrence Ross is bordering on a 50-40-90 season, playing just you know, the idealized Terrence Ross right now.
Yeah, man.
I don't see any reason why you wouldn't give him an A grade at the very least, if not an A plus.
I was just taking advantage of a chance to move it along quicker, but yeah.
I am ruining that for you.
That's okay. Terrence Ross deserves his own pod one day. All right. next up is Pascal Siakam for you, Russell.
This was the one I was worrying I would get because he's the one that I'm least sure of.
Yeah.
Where I would grade him. Given the fact that he stepped in and started his first 21 games of his NBA career as a late first, he's not lighting the world on fire by any means, but he's climbing into discussions where perhaps this could be someone who makes an all rookie team.
Yeah.
There are some problems with the starting lineup. That you can't help but point to him, because if you look at the lineup with him versus the lineup with Patterson, the difference in the defensive rating is just so huge that it's hard not to look at it and say, like for that to be better. But, you know, he's shooting 57% from the field, you know, six points, four boards, 0.7 blocks. In the position that he's in, I suppose that he's responded to some responsibility that I'm sure he was not expecting, to be the power forward on a team fresh off an Eastern Conference Finals appearance, where a team where everyone in the media is constantly saying that your starting power forward position needs to be better. Like, you can't overlook how much that must suck.
Yeah.
To be constantly reminded that you're not, you know, like you're an old, you, people are just looking past you. But he's doing a good job given who he is, where he came in. So I'm willing to give him a B because of, you know, he's been, a lot has been thrown on his plate to start his career, and I think he's handled it fairly well.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And I just think what the most important thing about this early season stretch with him starting before you'd assume Jared Sellinger gets back and takes over that starting job, it's nice to get a guy who is in his first season of his rookie deal to get him real NBA minutes to sort of develop and sort of learn what he needs to sort of improve upon. And I think it's going to be super valuable going down the line to have him have these minutes, even if he sees his role dry up in the second half of the season. This has been a lot of fun, and it's exciting that the Raptors have, you know, so many different young pieces who maybe aren't going to be cornerstone guys, but there's the makings of like a long-term rotation here. That is, it's pretty exciting and impressive, and at the very least, you know, there's lots of trade chips, so that's good. Dan will move past Jared Sellinger on this list, and this will be the last one, because the guy's after Fred VanVleet, who's an incomplete, and DeLon Wright, who hasn't played yet. Jonas Valanciunas for you, Dan, to close it out.
Jonas is a tough one. Obviously, we talked about him quite a bit earlier. I'm going to steal it. Call back to his highs have been high and his lows have been low. It was so nice early in the year when he started to look like he'd added that kind of mid-range jumper consistently. That first game of the season after he had that horrible preseason, he played so well. He was rebounding and he looked like he really, you know, was bringing back that fire he had in the playoffs last year. Mm-hmm. And then some nights he just is lost. Like he's indecisive. It's almost like he, with that jump shot now, he has too many tools in the box. He doesn't really know what to do, or he doesn't always have a plan. He needs to take that fadeaway, little fadeaway thing he's been doing out back and shoot it and just never use it again. I've seen him do it, I want to say 10 to 12 times, and I've not seen it come in once. It hits back rim every single time and pops out. So I don't know if he makes it in practice or what, but like, buddy, you're 7 feet, 250, go straight to the rim, dunk it, or, you know, go off the glass or something. You don't need to fade away. And I don't know. So I'm going to give him a C+ because he has not achieved. So for non-teacher people out there, B is where you're supposed to be. B means you've achieved what the expectations are. A is above and beyond. A C+ to me means he's not achieved what we expected of him, which was improvement. And I just haven't seen that improvement from him. It's not like he's been bad, but he hasn't been what he needs to be. for this team. I like, he's averaging, you know, 12.5 boards. He's 54%. He's okay. But it's not there every game. And you need that consistency from him now in his fifth season. He needs to bring it. Otherwise, it's why they're, I think it's not, they're obviously not struggling as a team, but it's one of the things that's hampering them from kind of getting to that next level.
Yeah, that's fair. We talked about Jonas early, so I don't think we need to add too much to that. And we've gone so long here. We appreciate you for sticking around and listening, but we're going to wrap this segment up now that we've got our grades out of the way. Thanks for the input of the teachers on the roster here to get that all put together. You guys are wonderful. But let's take a quick break on the other side, and we'll get into our episode sponsor, and we'll get into a throwback version of that random Raptors game, which will be super fun and weird. Are you guys excited? You guys pumped up?
Oh, baby.
I'm looking forward to you calling me old some more.
I can't wait. All right. We'll be back in just a second here on the headquarters. All right. Welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with Russell Peddle and Dan Grant. Wrapping things up here with your episode sponsor. This week's episode is brought to you by Chauncey Billups. You probably don't really remember that he was once a Raptor, but he was, and he ended up being a really good player. The reason I wanted to go back, not just because Dan and Russell are from this era, and this is sort of their when they sort of came up as Raptors fans, I guess, but I wanted to get into this because this year in particular, 1997-98, the year that I pulled Chauncey Billups from, is just one of the worst seasons I could ever imagine a team having. They were 16-66, and 24 different Raptors suited up for the team this season. Just a weird and awful season, and it's a far cry from the continuity and wonderfulness that the Raptors have right now. So that's why I wanted to go back to this season. So Chauncey Billups, in 29 career games with the Raptors, had 11.3 points, 3.3 assists, 2.7 boards, shot 31% from three, 34.9% from the field. So not a great start to Billups' eventually wonderful career. But yeah, Russell, what memories do you have of Toronto Raptor Chauncey Billups?
I remember caring about the trade. Yeah. Like, I remember, like, he was, what, the third overall pick in 97?
Yeah.
Like, and you don't very often see such a high draft pick traded halfway through his rookie season.
Right.
So I remember seeing that and being like, hey, this could be something. Plus, you know, they got D. Brown in that trade who, like, you know, had that cool dunk that I always used to try to do in the playground on, like, a lowered net where he covered his eyes. So it's a roundabout way of saying, yeah,
that was your team.
Yeah. But Chauncey, you know, he had a decent enough half a rookie season in Toronto. And I basically the excitement of the trade was my best memory of him from then, because he obviously didn't become, you know, the all-star until much later in his career, until he was almost 30. So, and he bounced around a lot in the early going, right? Like from Boston to Toronto to Denver,
Minnesota,
and then Detroit after that, I guess.
Mm.
Yeah, so I mean, 97, 98, you are right. This is like, I was coming up watching the Raptors for sure, like those first couple seasons. But man, oh man, were those rosters ever like big with a lot of rotating going on? Like, you know, when you're coming off a team that's created from an expansion draft and things like that, it's going to take some time to settle things down. So, yeah, these were some hard years to watch. Every now and again, a player pops up. Like, you could mention probably, like, half the players on this roster, and I'd have a hard time trying to picture them in a Raptors jersey.
Dan, anything from Chauncey Billups as a Raptor?
No, that was really, for me, I started watching the year before, but they were so bad that year. I do remember the trade vividly. Because he was such a high draft pick and people were excited, and he had some decent games. I think it was kind of a good thing and a horrible, horrible season for the team. And then obviously he just didn't stay. So, Then later on, when he had become so good, it was a thing that early Raptors fans pointed at. Like, why didn't we keep that guy? Because that was the thing that we used to do, you know, with guys like T-Mac and Camby and all those dudes. So Chauncey used to be on that list until we got enough players that we didn't need to mention him anymore.
Fair enough. All right, you guys want to play a throwback version of that random Raptors game?
Let's do it.
Okay, this game took place on February 22nd, 1998. I was a whole 5 years old. Yeah, I'm in October 92, so I'm I was a youthful fellow now. I don't even know if I knew what basketball was at this point, so.
I was doing stuff in October of 92. I remember things.
Okay. So yeah, this game happened February 22nd, 1998. The Raptors played the Vancouver Grizzlies and won.
Nice. It was
one of their few wins on the season. They won 113-105. The lineup for this Grizzlies team is hilarious. Sharif Abdur-Rahim led them with 22 points. Someone named Blue Edwards had 12 points.
Yeah. Blue Edwards.
Something called a Pete Chilcutt had 17 points. What the hell is going on? Tony Massenberg, I've heard of him. Bryant Reeves was in this game. Good Lord. Okay.
The funny thing is, I guarantee you I watched the crap out of this game because I cared so much about the concept because having been a basketball fan like years before the Raptors existed and always, you know, against friends and everything that were just such big hockey fans, and to have a NBA basketball game that featured two Canadian teams to me was like the best thing. I remember making such a big deal over watching those games, and like the ones in Vancouver were on so late. I grew up in Newfoundland where it's an hour and a half time difference, so you know you'd sometimes get games starting at midnight and on a weeknight. It'd be like, and I was like in high school, so yeah, I guarantee you I watched this game.
They used to have a trophy. They played, was it the Naismith Cup or whatever?
Yeah, Naismith Cup. They still have Matty D and them still met. Probably Leo actually or Jack mentions that whole thing when they play the Grizzlies still.
Well, let's get into your Naismith Cup champions, Toronto Raptors. This game brought them to 12-42 on the season. Good Lord. Okay. 10 Raptors played in this game.
Like someone's gonna win this game like 2-1. You know that, right?
No, you guys, you'll be fine. Okay, so Chauncey Billups played in this game. Of course, this was his career high game with the Raptors. He had 27 points on 5 of 13 shooting, 4 of 7 from 3, and 13 of 16 from the line. He had 5 assists, 2 boards, 5 turnovers, and yeah, led the team with 27 points. So 10 Raptors played in this game, including Billups, who started at point guard. So there's 4 starters and 5 bench guys for you to get. I'm going to randomly pick in my head who I thought won the grading most correctly, and we will give it to Russell. You go first.
Nice. All right. 97-98. Chauncey doesn't count, right? You already mentioned him.
Yep.
Crap, this is going to suck. T-Mac was drafted the same year as Billups, so he would have been there.
Correct. He came off the bench. He played 16 minutes. He was 4 of 5 from the field for 9 points, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 1 block. Good stuff from Trace McGrady. Dan.
Okay. 7-98. I want to go Marcus Camby.
Correct. He also came off the bench, played 30 minutes, 15 points, 9 rebounds, 4 blocks, 3 assists, 4 of 9 from the field. Very Marcus Camby game. Russell.
Nice. You just finished saying that, like, you know, a lot of fans would be like, what if we kept this guy? What if we kept that guy? I really feel that way sometimes when you look at, like, McGrady, Carter, Camby, Damon Stoudemire.
Yeah.
There could have been a really good team in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Russell, what you got?
Back in that era, the players that always comes to mind for me was Doug Christie, so I have to imagine that he played a lot of minutes for the team in those years. So
correct, he started, he played 39 minutes, he scored 18 points on 6 of 17 from the field, 4 of 9 from 3, 7 assists, 4 rebounds, 1 steal. Shout out to Doug Christie, who's a really nice guy, too. I've had him on a couple radio shows before. He's a very nice guy.
Really? You've talked to Doug Christie?
Yeah, Okay. Next goes to Dan. You're down 2-1.
Okay. Let me try to think. 97, 98. D. Brown.
Correct. Came off the bench.
I gave that away by mentioning this grade.
You sure did. Came off the bench. He had 6 points, 3 steals, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 of 3 from the field, both threes. The D. Brown I remember is the one who played at Illinois in the mid-2000s, so.
Because D. Brown won the dunk contest.
Yeah, look up D. Brown's dunk contest.
All right. Okay. So it's 2-2. Russell, back to you. There are 5 guys remaining. You're missing 3 starters and 2 bench guys.
Wow. Crap. I really wanted D. Brown next because I thought that was going to be... That's pretty much all I had. Freak, who played for the team?
One of these guys we've had as a sponsor before, and you were very happy to be on that episode.
Ooh, Dan's going to be very unhappy that you probably just gave me that, but Oliver Miller?
Correct. Yeah.
I am like Oliver Miller's number one fan, so.
It's too bad because the rest of the guys here, I don't really know what clue to give, so I'm sorry, Dan, but. So Oliver Miller had 0 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, 0-4 from the field. So,
that's right.
24 minutes. Yeah, he also started. So, yeah, there are 2 starters left and 2 bench guys left. I mentioned one of the starters in the preamble before the segment started, Dan. It's your turn.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Neither of you guys knew who the hell he was.
Oh, right. I'm going to save him. Maybe I'm going to try. Let's see. I want to see if I can go deep into my... How about... Carlos Rogers.
No Carlos Rogers in this one. Russell, you're back up.
Oh my god. Zantabak?
No Zantabak.
Wasn't he in the trade for Phillips?
Oh yeah. Crap.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. I don't know.
Zantabak is a legend, Sean. You should look him up.
Yeah, I've heard of him a little bit. Okay, Dan, your turn.
Okay, I'm going to not be cute. I'm going to go with Mr. Gary Trent.
Yes, Mr. Gary Trent.
The funny thing is, we didn't know who he was when you mentioned earlier, and I forgot who he was despite the fact that you mentioned him like 10 minutes ago. Yeah.
Gary Trent started. He played 30 minutes. He had 7 points, 15 rebounds, 8 of which were offensive, 2 assists, 3 blocks, 1 steal, 2 of 10 from the field.
How do I not remember a guy that started and played 30 minutes for the team back then?
I don't know, man.
Like, I don't know what he looks like. I can't picture him.
He averaged like 12 and 8 this season.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many games
did he? I think like 50-something.
Huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
So there's 1 starter left and 2 bench guys. The 2 bench guys, I think I've heard the name of one of them before. I don't know who the other guy is. And the starter, I don't know if I've heard of him either. So,
okay.
Good luck to Dan.
What's the score at right
now? Oh, wait, who got Gary Trent?
I did.
Okay, so it's Russell's turn. And
it's like 3-3.
It's 3-3.
Also, I just looked up Gary Trent. He only played 13 games as a Raptor.
Oh, my bad. Okay, I'm wrong.
He came back in the Damon Sotomayor trade.
Mm.
So, there you go.
And I see that's unfortunate because he got Gary Trent basically gifted to him and neither of us would have gotten him.
Yeah, but I gifted to you Oliver Miller, so
it's true.
But of course, you saved me from a guess. Then,
what do you got? There's 3 guys left: 1 starter, 2 bench guys. We can end on a tie if no one knows anything else.
I have one more guess.
Okay.
If Russell.
That sound is great on the ears of the podcast. People really want to watch The Grudge while listening to a podcast.
Noted. Okay, you mentioned the Stoudemire trade, which makes me want to say Alvin Williams.
No, he did not play in this game.
Ah.
Dan?
That was my guy.
Oh.
I was like, oh yeah, the Dan Stoudemire trade. That's where we got Alvin Williams. I don't think I have anyone else that I could... No. I don't know.
Russell, you out?
No, I don't want to be. I want to win this. I always win this.
I've never heard of two of these guys. The one guy I know, I don't know who he is. I just heard the name before. So, that's helpful.
Nah, man, I got nothing.
Alright, so the fifth starter was John Wallace.
Okay.
Yeah, he had a great game, actually. He played 37 minutes. He had 22 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists on 9 of 12 shooting. So there's that.
I remember him. I don't have a very fond, deep memories of him, but I do remember him. Like, he would have played. He played a lot for the team that year, didn't he?
Yeah, maybe. Next guy, Reggie Slater, came off the bench.
Oh shit! Yeah, I know Reggie Slater.
Okay, yeah, he had 9 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals, 4 of 11 from the field. And the last guy, almost a member of Club Trillion, if not for 2 rebounds, Sean Respert.
I could have gotten that.
not me. I remember Sean Respert.
Well, guys, it might be the first tie in the history of that Random Raptors game. That's disappointing. You guys going to go to a shootout? Oh, yeah, there should be a tiebreaker. Okay, let me find this here, then. We'll find a tiebreaker. I don't know what to do about this.
Did you tell us?
Who was the referee for this game? No, I'm kidding. what was the record? Okay, the Grizzlies lost this game, of course, and they were also bad this season. I remember the Raptors were 12-42 after this game. The closest person to the Vancouver Grizzlies record after this game will win the game. Russell, start with you.
You said 12-42.
That's what the Raptors were.
Yeah, but I'm trying to aim within the same number of games, roughly.
Right.
I'll say 14-40.
Dan, you got it.
I didn't guess.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. It's sudden death.
What?
It's sudden death.
Okay.
You got it on. I'm sorry. You deferred, and he.
Oh, he got it dead on.
Yeah, that's what I said. He got it.
So Russell got it.
Oh, he said Dan got it up.
No, I said you got it. I said, damn, you got it. Like, damn.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
No.
Damn.
You got it. I was like, how, what?
Very confusing.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast.
What's a better tiebreaker for that, for future reference, especially when you're on that far back?
Sure.
To guess the coach.
Oh, God. I don't even know who the coach would have been.
I'm not sure that I know.
Daryl.
It feels like a Butch Carter year.
Daryl Walker.
Doesn't say on the page. I'm not gonna look it up. So, you guys will be thinking. You can figure it out later. Tweet it out to the people. But congratulations, Russell. You win. You won last week as well, so good on you.
Pretty sure I'm undefeated in this game.
You're pretty good. As much as you hate it, you're really good at it. So
I do hate it because I hate that I'm getting a reputation for being good at it, and then suddenly I'm going to be bad someday.
Well, I want to thank both of you for coming on the show and taking so long to talk about the Raptors tonight. This was fun. It was enjoyable.
I've never been on a podcast shorter than this.
So I want to thank you guys. Russell, where is anything coming down to the site from you? You got your Dinos and Digits, anything else?
Usual Dinos and Digits, a couple recaps here and there, and that's about it. Yeah.
Cool. Dan, from you?
Yeah, I've got some previews and recaps coming up, and you can find me also over at stankpageteam.com.
Cool. I'm not sure. I don't even remember what previews and recaps I signed up for. I'll be doing something probably on Thursday before the Wolves game. I'll probably try to come up with something to write about. Also, you can find me with Locked On Raptors daily on the Locked On Podcast Network, Locked On Raptors on iTunes. Please check that out. Follow it on Twitter at Lockdown Raptors. I am at Woodley Sean. Russell is at Rusty Pedal Bike. Dan is at Slammin' Danny G, who's a regular member of the Tweet of the Week army now.
I was going to point that out. I hear that every week. I'm like, oh, I got to tell Dan. 5 weeks in a row.
Yeah, so good on you for that level
of... You're a regular PJ Pimple Scribble.
Dr. Gorilla Fats.
Big Kraga Daga.
Okay, we have to leave. This is too long. But... thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Headquarters. Until then, find us on iTunes, leave a rating, leave a review. Very much appreciate the feedback. And thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you soon.